From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. In the spring of 1968, student demonstrations disrupted college campuses across the country. Civil rights and the war in Vietnam prompted students to march, protest, and sometimes occupy campus buildings. On April 23, 1968, 40 years ago today, students took over buildings at Columbia University in New York City. Black activists from Harlem, along with black and white students from Columbia, opposed construction of a new university gymnasium in nearby Morningside Park. The protesters believed local residents would have little access to the gym, which was to be built on public land.
The campus radical group Students for a Democratic Society opposed the gym and also opposed Columbia's ties to a think tank involved in Pentagon weapons research. After that day in April, Mark Rudd, the chairman of Columbia's SDS chapter, tied together the big issues on campus.
When we stand up and say the students of Columbia University will not be students in a university that exploits black people, that's an important statement, and we're not going to let anyone turn us around. When we say we will not and can't be students in a university that exploits the hell out of the people of Vietnam and develops weapons to kill them, to murder them.
In a few minutes, Robert will have a personal remembrance of that time at Columbia University. First, as part of our series Echoes of 1968, NPR's Margot Adler takes us back to the protest that began on April 23rd of that year. What happened and why it mattered.
That afternoon, 40 years ago, a group of about 150 students and community members marched to the construction site of the new gym. They tore down a section of fence and then occupied a building, Hamilton Hall, and held Dean Henry Coleman hostage.
Am I to understand, then, that I am not allowed to leave this building?
Well, let me ask. Does Dean understand that he's not to be to leave this building?
Yeah!
In the early morning hours of the next day, African-American students told the white students to leave. Those white students, many of them members of the Students for a Democratic Society, then occupied Lowe Library and the office of University President Grayson Kirk. The university radio station, WKCR, reported live from each occupied building.
There are, I estimate, approximately 80 or 70 black students in the building.
So we're leaning out the window of the fourth floor. The building is completely barricaded. Nobody can get in or out.
Dean Coleman, as far as I can ascertain, is in no physical danger from the students.
The building is completely sealed off now. The crowd outside is enormous and growing every minute. The mood inside the building is very, very tense.
Within days, five buildings were occupied. Some students held counter-protests, calling for university life to return to normal, and there were attempts to negotiate and mediate. The administration agreed to suspend work on the gym, but refused amnesty for students. In the early morning of April 30th, police moved in and cleared the buildings. Again, here is WKCR reporting live.
The police have walked over the demonstrators on the left stairway of Fairweather and dragged them off the stairs. Some of them are students again, and some of them are faculty members. There's a huge crowd. The shout is, Kirk must go.
712 students were arrested. More than 100 students, four faculty members, and a dozen police were injured.
Strike! Strike!
Strike!
Strike!
Strike!
Strike!
Strike!
A student strike was called, and the campus shut down for the rest of the semester. Protests continued through the spring, buildings were occupied, and there were more arrests. April 23, 1968, came just weeks after the assassination of Martin Luther King. Riots and arson had spread through American cities. Earlier in the year, the Tet Offensive had been fought on television screens in living rooms across the country. Lyndon Johnson was forced to give up his bid for another term as president. And so much more would happen as 1968 unfolded. In Europe, students protested in the streets of Paris, Rome, Berlin, and Prague. And in June, Senator Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated. In the late summer, the Democratic National Convention in Chicago dissolved into chaos as police beat up and arrested street protesters. Todd Gitlin is a professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia.
Sociologist Barry Thorne once described this as event time. You were living not by the calendar. You were out of control. I mean, literally, it felt that the events had seized hold of humanity.
Passions were high, and 4 decades later, for many of the students and teachers at Columbia in 1968, passions have not completely cooled. SDS chairman Mark Rudd lived underground as a revolutionary for 7 years. He is now a retired math teacher. He looks back at the protests and says,
I see it as a part of the enormous anti-war movement. And in general, that's something I'm very proud to have been part of, along with millions of people. We stopped a war of aggression.
But Alan Silver, a professor of sociology at Columbia, who has taught there since 1964, says Rudd is deluding himself.
The Army of North Vietnam stopped the war because it imposed costs on the American polity and society that was not prepared to bear.
Silver agrees Columbia's administration remained aloof and remote from both students and faculty and lost moral authority. But his main argument is that the view of student radicals, that the university was part of an evil imperialist system and deserved to be overthrown, was deeply destructive.
The liberal universities were among the last refuges of real freedom, disciplined freedom, intellectual freedom, cultural freedom, from plastic America and Nixonian America.
Many former Columbia activists of the time take issue with Silver's account. Louise Yellen teaches literature at the State University of New York at Purchase. She believes the Columbia protests fueled continuing movements for change, civil rights, the environment, and most importantly for her, feminism.
68 for us was a spur to a new way of looking at the world and also to a feminist movement which really changed our lives in many ways.
For her husband, Robert Friedman, a journalist who now covers world finance,
the gym was stopped. The relationship with the Institute for Defense Analyses was suspended. And the Columbia strike was a success.
Friedman doesn't buy the idea that the extreme militancy of radical students fueled a backlash that helped Nixon win victory in the fall. It's helpful to remember that Democratic President Lyndon Johnson said that passing civil rights legislation lost the South for a generation. But Alan Silver maintains that the radicals of the 1960s may not have caused Nixon's victory.
My claim is simply that that kind of action, whether at the university or elsewhere, contributed, played into the hands of the Nixonian repression. That's the only claim.
And helped the arguments of conservatives who followed, from Ronald Reagan to George W. Bush. This weekend, the various survivors of the 1968 Columbia protests will have a chance to tell their stories. As one former protester, now a professor at Stanford, told me, we want to get out the truth before we are dead and have our version be part of the archive. Whoever's version prevails, the students in 1968 did achieve 2 of their objectives. The gym was never built, and Columbia's president, Grayson Kirk, announced his retirement before the new academic year. Margo Adler, NPR News, New York.